Hello, everyone. Welcome again to What Happened This Week. Did I travel back in time or something? Because a lot of these stories are looking very familiar. No new details about the Wii U, Stalker 2 is not quite dead, and Zynga, well, what the hell is Zynga still doing in the news? Let's find out. But first, yes, we've got an update on the Fallout Interplay Bethesda thing. As we reported on Monday, the details of the settlement came out, regrettably after I'd updated last week's episode, and Interplay no longer has the rights to develop Fallout Online. Over on Bethesda's blog, we've got the announcement, reading verbatim. Under the terms of the settlement, the license granted to Interplay to develop the Fallout MMO is null and void, and all rights granted to Interplay to develop a Fallout MMO revert back to Bethesda, effective immediately. Interplay has no ongoing right to use the Fallout brand or any Fallout intellectual property for any game development. ZeniMax will pay Interplay $2 million as consideration in the settlement. Each party will bear its own costs of the litigation, and Bethesda will continue to own all Fallout intellectual property rights. End quote. So, it's pretty final. Bethesda gets the license since they've proven they can actually care for it and make games with it, and Interplay gets food money. To be honest, I'm surprised it ended this way, although maybe now Interplay can sell off the rest of its properties and quietly shut down while actually paying its 11 employees, rather than continuing the facade that it makes anything. There's a separate component with the would-be developer of the Fallout MMO, Masthead Studios. Interplay was working through them for actual development. Bethesda filed a second suit against them, and that ended more decisively back in December. Basically, Interplay couldn't sub-license the title while their ownership of said license was in dispute. Masthead got nothing out of this, despite that they were probably the only people who did any real work on the game, assuming it ever existed. Far be it from me to encourage ZeniMax to be litigious. I do love that word, it sounds so dirty. But this is for the best for all involved parties. Whatever your feelings on the Bethesda fallouts, Interplay wasn't going to do anything with the license. To believe otherwise is laughably naive to an extent explainable only by retrograde amnesia. And that is the first instance of someone putting two words that start with EX back-to-back you've heard this year. Next topic, again from the old news column. Say what you will about Eastern European developers, they are a tenacious bunch. Care of the official Stalker Facebook page is this unusually upbeat message. The Stalker team is extremely happy. Why? Because we are continuing work on Stalker 2 after the holidays. I swear, this is turning into some Hollywood action movie drama, where a key character gets killed off and they look like they're dead but they never saw the body, and when they come back nobody can believe it's them. GSC, I saw you die. I saw you take the bullet to the head and fall backwards into a meat grinder, and then the grinder exploded and the remains of the grinder were pitched off the edge of a dam. GameSpot, care of Edge magazine, offers a bit more information on the subject, with GSC rep Oleg Yavorsky saying the studio is still in the process of seeking funding to back up the project. We still don't have a clear picture on what happened, apart from the publisher deal falling through. As I mentioned, the rumors ran into pretty strange territory, like the Russian mafia looking for a cut of the profits, that kind of thing. In any case, it looks like they just need some investment capital to keep the ball rolling, and I admit that some of the concept art from Stalker 2 makes me want to cling to this, to believe the game and the company are really still alive. Hell, the games themselves make me want to do that. But man, when the news broke, it was a hell of an emotional roller coaster, and I don't usually get emotional about studios closing. Far be it from me to quote the Backstreet Boys, but quit playing games with my heart, GSC. I really can't take it. The next bit of zombie news I'm going to discuss is Zynga, one of my favorite topics, and they're somehow still acquiring people. Business Wire reports Zynga just hired one Barry Cottle, a tech and entertainment industry veteran, most recently with Electronic Arts. Their former executive vice president of EA Interactive oversaw a lot of their mobile and social gaming efforts. Quoting the article, "It's rare that you'll find someone who possesses a deep operational background and also has the vision to see where your business and your industry are headed," said Mark Pincus, founder and CEO of Zynga. "Barry is one of those executives, and I'm very excited to have him join the team." Unquote. Zynga, meet me over on Speaker 2. So, Zynga, how you been? I know you had that IPO thing a while ago. How's that working out for you? Ah, come on, you don't have to be shy about it. I know already. You're down $1.13 from your opening price, you're making social games that cannibalize your existing user base, and the buzz in financial circles is that your meteoric rise in the build-up to going public was all smoke and mirrors. Look at your acquisitions. You bought offices and development houses in foreign countries, never quite getting the talent for yourselves. No, you only brought executives into the fold individually. Suits. People that know business. People that go to the same cocktail parties and BDSM fetish nightclubs as the senior management at Goldman Sachs. Not people that know how to make games. Look at Mr. Cottle. EA was no threat to you in the social circle. You know that. That's your turf, your home field. Why are you hiring from EA to help you manage that field? Unless you're not looking to make games. You're just posturing to make a large traditional game developer look bad and keep everyone's eyes off the fact that your stock is underperforming. You still don't understand, do you? This industry, it's not about dominating the news cycle. It's not about grabbing headlines so the blogosphere can masturbate over how fast they can spread rumors and Michael Pachter can herald the doom of traditional game consoles. It's about consistency, keeping up the effort after the press conference is over. It's about direction. Thing is, I'm not saying I know where you're headed as a company. What I'm saying is, I think you don't know either. And that is why you aren't trusted. And EA, just because neither of us are Zynga fans, don't pretend like we're all buddy-buddy all of a sudden. I still have my complaints over the whole Origin fiasco, which got worse this week when something I feared came to pass. BioWare announced that Origin will be required for Mass Effect 3, and it will not be appearing on Steam. The news broke on BioWare's forums, where Chris Priestley played the part of Don't Shoot the Messenger with the following FAQ. He explains that Origin will be required for all PC versions, be they physical or digital copies. Unlimited number of installs, one-time activation, no constant connection required outside multiplayer, opt-out clause for data collection, and yes, no ME3 on Steam. You know, I could have lived with that, were it not for his response on the Steam question, quoting word for word. During initial release, Mass Effect 3 will be available on Origin and a number of other third-party digital retailers, but not on Steam at this time. Steam has adopted a set of restrictive terms of service which limit how developers interact with customers to deliver patches and other downloadable content. We are intent on providing Mass Effect to players with the best possible experience no matter where they purchase or play the game, and are happy to partner with any download service that does not restrict our ability to connect directly with our consumers. If you'll pardon me quoting my cousin Vinny, everything that guy just said is bullshit. That is almost word for word what EA says about them yanking games off of Steam, that Steam is restricting their ability to directly service their customers. This isn't Chris Priestley saying this, he knows it's a shitstorm waiting to happen. This is him being told to say this. Thank you so much, EA. You are truly a force for good in these dark times. Let me be clear. There remains the possibility that Valve was being petulant because BioWare DLC is sold and installed separately and Valve wanted a cut of it. That said, it is less likely than EA mandating that BioWare use EA's own distribution network, which they previously stated was not a competitor to Steam. Complicating this is the fact that BioWare's DLC distribution method is needlessly complicated, requiring that you convert money to MS Funbucks in big, inflexible blocks. You then spend the Funbucks, download executables, and run said executables one by one, and you have to rerun these each time you reinstall the game. Compare with Steam, where you spend the money, click install, and that's the end of it. If you reinstall the game, the content is already a part of that. It's as easy as it currently gets. BioWare, I love you guys. You made some good DLC. Shadow Broker was great, Legacy was great, but there are better ways and I know you're being forced to avoid them. It's not your fault, but I am worried this is going to come between us. You're asking me to get into Origin so I can play Mass Effect 3. I don't know, I might have to, I'm an unprincipled consumer whore, it's practically inevitable. But this is going to be a bridge too far for a lot of people. Speaking of companies that start with the letter B, Eurogamer has confirmed that Diablo 3 will in fact see a console release. Blizzard's community manager, Mika Whipple, that's a fun name for you, posted about it on Twitter, where he was asked about rumors that the game was headed for consoles. He replied thusly, "Yep, Josh Mosquera is the lead designer for the Diablo console project." Now this was kind of an open secret. The article mentions a quote from director Jay Wilson back in November. Wilson admitted they weren't as secretive about this, and that the chief barrier in this case was assembling a console team in the first place. This could be kind of a big deal. Blizzard knows multiplayer like few in the industry. If they somehow work in cross-platform multiplayer, you could see Diablo 3 really take off. Maybe not Skyrim numbers, but it'll crack the 7-digit barrier easily. Granted, they've given no indication that's the case, so that's more of a pipe dream. But it's a fun pipe dream. Here's the issue, though. I haven't forgotten that Diablo 3 will require always-on internet for the PC version even to play the single player, thanks to, what was it, Battle.net features, some auction house thingy? Are the same requirements going to exist for consoles? Forget the argument about whether it's necessary, because it's not. But how are they going to get Sony and Microsoft to go along with this? Blizzard can't mandate requirements the way they can on PC. And if that always-on requirement doesn't exist on consoles where it does on computers, doesn't that shoot even more holes in their argument? Just bugs me, really. It's more evidence that everyone in a position of power in the games industry is in deep denial about the internet's less-than-modern infrastructure. Got a few other things for tonight, and this one's actually kind of serious. GameSpot picked up this rather disturbing news. About 300 Foxconn workers in one of their plants in China threatened to commit mass suicide by jumping from the building's roof. Foxconn is a big contract manufacturer, handles electronic components for several major companies, including the big three, Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo. The workers were reportedly building 360s and were denied compensation packages that the company had previously promised. They had originally gone in for raises, but were denied. They were then given the choice of keeping their current jobs at current pay or quitting with compensation. Most of the workers chose the second option, which is when Foxconn backed out of the deal, and then the workers staged their protest by threatening to jump all at once. They were eventually talked down. Thankfully, nobody was injured. But events like this get to the core of what I mean when I go on social and economic tangents. This isn't the first time Foxconn's been in the news. As GameSpot points out, they've made headlines in 2010 with a string of attempted suicides and several deaths over poor working conditions and low wages. The games industry is still an industry and subject to the same forces. Yes, there are people who view it as the unique form of entertainment and is, but there are also people for whom this is just a business, and they're going to do what they always do. Take shortcuts, outsource labor to cut costs, and we still need to physically assemble these wonder gadgets of ours, and generally play games with human lives. Why anybody continues to do business with these pricks is beyond me. Oh wait, I know. That's where the cheap labor is. On a lighter note, Ars Technica amused me greatly with this next article. Ars spends an hour with the Wii U and learns nothing new about it. That's the headline. Writer Ben Kuchera sat down with a device during the Consumer Electronics Show, which ran earlier this week from the 10th to the 13th, and he wound up playing the same tech demos that were featured at E3 last year, examples of games they could develop, but not actual games, per se. He asked if the Nintendo reps could name a title in active development for the Wii U. Their reply, "We're not talking about that yet." He asked about the specs. They handed him a sheet hinting at the contents. That's his word, hinting. An IBM power-based multi-core processor, an AMD Radeon-based GPU, but again, no specifics. The console itself had a pretty basic shape, a simple, smooth white box, small and utilitarian like the Wii. Kuchera asked if that's what it will look like when it launches, and he was told that's still being worked on. About the only thing the Nintendo reps could say was that the Wii U would not be able to improve the resolution of Wii games, which makes sense, there's a reason movies get re-released for high definition. But about everything else, Nintendo is keeping a very tight lid on the system. I'd be shocked if they had anything concrete besides the bare-bones hardware. I even said last week that Nintendo probably doesn't know what the box is going to look like. All this mystery could help them in the run-up to E3, but there is a concern here. If the final reveal is underwhelming, and you pair that with less-than-expected sales, remember, this is not going to sell like the Wii. It's just not. Then Nintendo will have a perception problem going into the next generation that can easily be smoothed over with good games, but they still need to be careful with the hype here. And for my last thing tonight, I'm going to make fun of Gaikai, the game streaming service. Eurogamer has a quote from Nenea Reeves, the chief product officer at Gaikai, who spoke at CES and said that not all of the current console makers will have one more generation. That will be the big news at E3. One of the commenters on that story hits the nail on the head. Random, unfounded comment from a nobody. This is the sort of thing people say when they want attention but don't know how to get it in a healthy fashion. Remember what I said about Zynga and dominating the news cycle? Similar principle. Make a big, bold, utterly ridiculous claim that nobody will remember by the time we see whether it happens. This, in short, is just one part of the doom chorus that rotates from one target to the next based on what happened yesterday instead of over the last 5 years. Nintendo is losing to social games, Microsoft to buy Sony, PC gaming is dead, indie games are dead. We've been over this so often, we know the reality is much more complicated than this. One of the posters on Penny Arcade has a good response to this. The scale of the disaster needed to force one of the big three out would boggle the mind. It would be comparable with watching a major developed nation break apart. That doesn't happen just because they had a bad year or two. Sega needed a string of serious fuck-ups to end up where it is now. The Sega CD, the 32X, the Saturn, the Dreamcast's poor launch, despite being years ahead of its time. None of those alone did them in. It took one after the other. It didn't let up. And that's what it would take here. Nintendo was coming off a very successful generation. Sony made a few stumbles, but they have a very strong legacy with the PlayStation. Microsoft is doing just fine. You could have Kaz Hirai plant a brick of C4 in every third PS4 box, consult with the heretical powers of chaos to prevent the other two consoles from launching before Sony, and then be caught publicly handing a briefcase full of client information to actual Somali pirates, and I guarantee you that weeks later people would go back to wondering when Uncharted 4 is coming out. Trust me, they're not the big three for nothing. Anybody that says otherwise shouldn't be trusted with reading material more complex than my pet goat. Alright, that's all the time I have for tonight's. Thanks for joining us, everyone. For Random NPC, this is John. I'll see you next time.